Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I'm here with Jason Orida McClellan. This is actually our second go because I said McClintock last time and I almost did it again. And now I'm kind of giggling when I'm introducing you. And what a mess.
Well, I do appreciate that this week you threw in the Orida. I appreciate that shout-out.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is I just realized that Orida is a combination of Oregon and Idaho, and it's because one of their commercials kind of showed both states together. I had never realized that.
Hooray, Alejandro figured it out.
Yeah. And, of course, people may know now that you're based out of Boise.
Boise, Idaho.
Boise. It's kind of fun to say.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
So that's cool. So how are you doing? How are things?
Everything's good, man. I have been talking to a lot of people around here and finding out that a lot of people in the wonderful city of Boise are super into UFOs, extraterrestrial life, and not surprisingly, Bigfoot. This is Bigfoot country.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. Have you had your own Bigfoot encounter yet?
Not yet, but I'm sure it's coming soon. There's tons of wildlife here. Lots of parks like through the city because there's a lot of water. The Boise River flows through the city. Well, I just have been going on walks through these various parks. There are tons of parks here right in the city and lots of wildlife in those parks. But yesterday I saw 6 deer in this city park. Pretty cool stuff. No Bigfoot yet, but I'm sure that's coming. And on the other side of the state in Pocatello, Idaho, I just learned that every year they have a big Bigfoot conference there because it's just Bigfoot country. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. It sounds nice. It sounds like a complete change from Arizona because one thing about out here is, at least in the southern deserty area, the rivers don't have water in them.
Isn't that funny? And people always laugh at that when they come to visit Arizona. They're driving and they go over one of the bridges and they see the sign that says so-and-so river and they look and there's no water.
Yeah, so weird. I remember when I came from Colorado and I crossed one bridge and it says something river and there's no water. And I'm like, that's curious. And then it starts happening over and over again. And you're like, what the heck is going on here? But then you get used to it. And then when you drive somewhere else, like when I drive to California and we go over a bridge and there's a big, pretty river, it's like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, you know the reason for that. No. Arizona is a UFO hotspot, as you know, and we have good relationships with extraterrestrials and extraterrestrial technology. So our water in Arizona has alien cloaking devices.
Oh, that's very interesting.
There's actually water in those rivers. You just can't see it.
So that'd be cool to go swimming in it, and it'd look like you're just floating.
Let's do that, and I'll let you dive in first.
But you have to be careful if you're skinny dipping because you're assuming that you know, all of your naughty bits are underwater and cannot be seen, but to someone outside of the would see you kind of floating in the air naked.
Well, if that's your plan, I am not going swimming with you.
That would be freaky.
Oh, yeah.
So good to hear that you're, enjoying yourself out there. It sounds like it's beautiful.
It is quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, our guest today, to tell people about our guest, is actually in a desert himself, and he's out in Roswell, New Mexico, which is very similar to where we are because it's very deserty and dry in Roswell if you haven't been there. And I definitely recommend people do go there. But our guest is Frank Kimbler, and he works at the New Mexican Military Institute, where he teaches high school and college level courses, mostly in geology, but also in astronomy and other scientific fields. But he's a great guy, and when he moved out there, he decided, you know, hey, I'm a geologist. I think most likely something really did happen with some weird thing crashing in the desert. So I'm going to go look for some debris and look at some pictures and figure this out. So he did go look for debris, and he's found some odd stuff. Of course, we've had him on the show before. Open Minds was the one who broke the story about this test he had done where some debris he got had some mysterious properties that could indicate they were created off-planet, but he's got to do more testing to confirm that. But we caught up with him because since then, he has been on a couple specials and on television, and he's found more material, and we also needed to get an update on his investigation of the pieces that he already has. So, like I said, you know, we've been doing some update shows in the last few weeks, and this is another update, catching up with Frank Kimbler. Exciting, huh?
Love Frank Kimbler. He's got exciting stuff.
Yeah.
We saw him in Roswell. That was the last time we saw him.
Yeah.
Talked a little bit with him about his new stuff, but he's always got cool stuff going on.
Yeah, always really cool stuff. So, yeah, so that's the show today. So pretty exciting. Speaking of cool stuff, I can hear the dogs back there scratching. So luckily,
that's me.
You have your dogs out there with you.
I do have my dogs.
Your trusty companions.
Yes.
So let's talk some UFO news for the week. And I am very curious to know what story or stories you want to talk about this week.
Oh, I bet you want to know. There's been so much news, and
mm-hmm.
It's almost so much news, it's difficult to keep up on all of it. But I was shocked. Well, not shocked, but just a little surprised this morning to see that this story is still making the rounds, and it was on CNN headline news this morning. And of course, I'm talking about these UFO photos and videos from Houston, Texas.
Nah.
Now, this happened from, I know it was probably your story, sorry, but
oh no, it wasn't. It's just frustrating that it's making so much news, because as we're going to talk about, there's some better stories. But go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are these photos that started appearing, I guess it was Tuesday. It really started Monday night last week. And people started posting photos on Twitter and Instagram, and people started commenting on them, sort of went viral pretty fast. And the local news stations, the NBC affiliate there, started covering it. And like I said, again, on CNN Today, and pretty much every media outlet around the country has reported on this now, and some international as well. And what we see in these photos is an object in the sky, seemingly in the sky, with a series of lights sort of in a circle formation. And in one of the photos, you can kind of see a light in the middle of this object as well. So the circular object illuminated on the ends with multiple individual lights, and people are just going crazy with this. And they're talking to people on the news, and with this story, Alejandro, it's difficult to make out how many people actually saw this object with their own eyes, or if it's just this DJ who started posting the photos. The details get a little weird for me, but you know, some people have suggested that we've seen objects like this before, and they turn out to be these circular, like lights you see on the freeway, causing a lens flare. That is the case with a lot of these, but I'm not convinced that's the case in this circumstance. But what do you think about this UFO?
Yeah, I'm completely convinced that it's, I think it's although a reflection on the windshield of the highway lights. Some local posted a picture of the highway lights, and it's
mm-hmm.
exactly the same. So that's a big indicator. But that's what I think that is exactly going on. This DJ, who is the primary witness, in fact, there's only been a couple things that were not his. He has not come forward, and it's my suspicion. And he'll probably – I keep watching his social networks because I think he'll post something. I think he knows exactly what they are, and he posted this as a joke, and he's just kind of having fun, and that's why he hasn't spoken to the news at all. They've just been posting his stuff, and he's even joked around how they're trying to get a hold of him, but he has not responded to them. You know, they look exactly like the lights in the lamppost, and that's what's difficult. And then there's another video posted where this guy said, I saw some weird lights too. And in that one, it looks like an obvious reflection of the lights on his control board, you know, his control panel, like his stereo and stuff, being reflected on the window in his car. So I think, you know, that's what this all is. And they even, in the first interview that the local news did, some people had suggested that because they look so similar. And but these guys in Houston are running with it when, I don't know, to me that it's pretty obvious.
Well, and I don't know that all of the photos necessarily represent the same object either. They look a little different. One, the one with the light in the middle sort of looks like these kite objects we've seen before. And actually somebody posted on OpenMinds.tv a comment on the story that you wrote about this story with a link to a video showing pretty much an identical kite, showing how these people created it with the LED lights, what it looks like in the sky. It's exactly what we see in that first image with the circle of lights and then the light in the middle. But the other lights look very, very much like reflection to me. So I don't know what to make of this story.
Yeah, I think you're right. That first image, the problem with that first image is that I can't find where that came from. They don't credit, all they say is social media is where that image came from. In the story, they talk about the DJ's pictures, and it's all about the DJ's pictures and this one other video they got like a few days afterwards. But they don't refer to that social media picture, but they keep showing it, and they don't show where it came from. And I've looked through their social media. I've looked through, you know, all of the social media. I spent probably half a day really looking into everything related to this one because I had to comb through, you know, their social media and then also the DJ's social media and others, the club that the guy works for and everything to research it. But, yeah, I can't find where that picture came from. But you're right. That picture, even though it has the circle of lights, which just look just like the lights in the on the lamp posts, it does have a light in the middle and then two lights to the left or right. So it's hard to know where that one comes from or what's going on in that picture. I admit that.
And again, yeah, it's the details here are difficult to track down, and I think a lot of the mainstream media has done this as well. I just kind of taken the popularity of this story, and they're reporting that a lot of people saw this object, and we don't know that. And as is the case with a lot of UFO stories, you know, it comes down to witness testimony and whether or not you want to believe what the witnesses are claiming. And if people did, in fact, see an object in the sky, then, you know, that makes it less likely that we're looking at reflections here or lens flare. But we can't source that. There aren't credited people with,
yeah,
you know, these people who saw it, who took the photos. We know this DJ, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, all we have is this DJ. And if you go look at the social media and stuff, no one else said they saw it. The news is just blowing. They're making really larger claims than they should be, this guy who's reporting on it. And quite frankly, I think they're doing they're just sensationalizing it and or doing a really terrible job with researching this story. Maybe they're just having fun with it. But it's sad that that one's making so much news because it's just kind of a crap story. It's not a very good one. And it's really highlighting some poor work, I think, by the local news, unless they just want to sensationalize it, which is probably what they're doing. Whereas I think there's some more exciting stuff, like that UFO that was caught in the video in Western Canada, where, you know, we asked the MUFON investigator, or the photo expert, Mark D'Antonio. He thinks it's an earth grazer, which is like a meteor that comes in and it just grazes, comes into the atmosphere, but then it goes back out of the atmosphere, which is possible, you know, but it's, It's an extraordinary video either way, because you see this large object that punches through the cloud and leaves a trail of the cloud behind it. And this is a video caught, you know, it was caught on camera by a news station. So it's a very credible video. And, you know, they were actually filming a fire, and you can see this thing in the background. And Michael, our video guy, did a great job of zooming in on this thing and slowing down so you could really see it really well on our story of that. I think that's a really cool video, bolide or UFO or whatever it is. It's super cool.
Plus, I agree that it's super cool, yeah.
Yeah, we know its background. We know where it comes from. Very credible origins.
Yeah, I think some people, you know, see a video like that and think that it's potentially a hoax video. But yeah, because of the source, I think we rule that out.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the cool thing. Whereas pictures just from social media, it's hard to know whether or not they're a hoax, especially ones like that first one they show in Houston, where we don't even know who it comes from or where it comes from.
Right, right.
So, yeah, some cool stuff. But, yeah, people can check out. I think that we have a lot more, or a lot of information on that Houston sighting.
Absolutely.
Compared to other places, but also Western Canada. And we have links to all these social networking areas I was talking about, but the Western Canada one's really cool. Implore people to check that out. But my story is the Chilean government. I think this is so cool and interesting in that, you know, Leslie Kane wrote about this on the Huffington Post, and I kind of did a synopsis of her piece, and I link back to her piece. But and she's kind of the de facto kind of U.S. Kind of press person for this group, CEFA-A, the Committee for the Study of Anomalous Aerial Phenomena, this official Chilean organization that is under the Ministerial Department of Civil Aeronautics, which is their equivalent of the FAA. And so essentially that's how. That's like if our FAA had a UFO investigation department that worked closely with the Air Force. That's essentially what this is, which is really cool. And they had a meeting, and their purpose of this meeting was to talk about whether UFOs pose a threat to their military air operations. And what's cool is this meeting had a lot of important people, administration from the DGAC, but it also had some scientists that specialize in various areas, and these are some of the experts in their country. And as Leslie points out several times in her story, it's just kind of surreal to her to have this high-level meeting of people who take this field and this subject so serious. She even writes, before these people even stepped to the table, in previous meetings, you know, they had already determined that UFOs are a real phenomena and something worthy of study. So even, you know, and she talks about some of the discussion that happened, you can tell that they're talking about how we've already decided that there's some sort of intelligence behind these things. We just need to determine whether malevolent or benevolent. But their conclusion at the end was, out of all the cases we've studied, we've seen no evidence that there's any intent to harm. And so we don't believe that the phenomena poses a threat to air safety, but that it's something they continue to need to look into, and they need, you know, various people from various arenas and science to help them with this investigation of what is going on and what are these things, where are they from, and who created them. So really cool story to read this kind of high-level meeting and by these officials, and to see this taken seriously, you know, by these officials in this country. And as she writes, it's kind of a window, or it's something that, of course, we would like over here, but it's a scenario that if it was taken serious over here, you know, conversations on here would probably be similar to this one that they had out there.
I think it's an odd conclusion on their part, though, for this group that takes it very seriously.
Why is that?
Actively investigates it. and concludes that they still don't understand the phenomenon, to then think they have enough information to make a conclusion like that. I mean, they do admit that, you know, there have been a small number of accidents attributed to unidentified aerial phenomena, but they don't have definitive proof that those objects were the cause of these almost accidents. But the fact that there are almost accidents with things that can't be identified, whether or not it's intentional or not, they could still pose a threat.
See, I agree with what they're saying, because, and I see your point, and they did speak to that, because they did say on one occasion, only one, they felt there was a near miss, like you said. But that other issues arose from pilots being distracted by looking at these things. So that issue, they feel they can resolve with more education, so that pilots are not so startled and staring at these things. Although, you know, even if you have a lot of training that tells you that they could be around, it's something you're going to want to check out if you're seeing it, whether you're flying or not. So that's how they felt they could deal with the distraction issue. But their point also was that, you know, even with the one near miss or the times that people are distracted, and they spoke to this specifically, the percentage is so extremely low. It happens so very few times that that's why they feel it's not necessarily a threat. And also, I think they're mostly looking for, you know, the intent of the objects, and at least in their experience. And I think, you know, looking back at these things, they in every near miss scenario, they move out of the way. And so they seem intelligent enough to get out of the way. Although there have been those stories too where they fly towards a craft and then move out of the way at the last second, you know, freaking everybody out.
And if they are the cause of pilots being distracted or freaking out or something, you know, that still could fall under the category of or the description of causing a threat or being a threat, you know, with looking at transportation on the ground, authorities look at texting while driving as being a threat to, you know, road safety, so they outlaw texting while driving or whatever. You know, the phone itself isn't evil. Text messages aren't evil. They're not intending to cause harm, but they are causing the distraction. So while they may be looking at it intent, they should specifically say that, and perhaps they do. But to just throw this blanket statement that we've determined that UFOs don't cause a threat to air safety seems a little hasty to me. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, interesting.
Because we do have lots of stories of, like you mentioned, things coming at craft and you know, which can create an alarm and panic to those on the plane and the pilots, which can cause human reaction to create another problem.
But
I think the fact that they admit that we still don't know what these things are, what their intents are, where they come from, you know, I think it's too early to say that. I think they could say in most cases it seems that they don't pose a threat, but to say, we figured out they don't pose a threat, I don't know where they're coming from with that.
Well, yeah, I guess in your point in distraction,
that's just me.
But that's not a threat. I wouldn't label that a threat. I could definitely say they've, you know, planes aren't being downed by UFOs, and I think that is what they're looking at. You know, so in that case, it wouldn't be a threat. So I don't know. I don't see, you know, if they were downed, then that would be something totally different. Or even if they had one case of that. But
there are objects in the air that are not supposed to be there. We have no way of communicating with them. We can't even identify them. Birds pose a threat. They're not intentionally posing a threat. They're not trying to cause harm to airplanes, but they do. They're viewed as a threat to air safety.
Damn birds.
Yeah. So are drones and other things that fly in restricted airspace. I mean, things in the sky that aren't supposed to be there are a threat to air safety. We know that UFOs are there. We can't communicate with them. We can't get them out of the way. We have no idea when and where they're going to appear. So to me, that seems like it's still a threat.
Interesting. Very interesting.
That's my perspective. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, cool.
But I am so glad to see these guys doing what they're doing. And this announcement made a lot of headlines. And I think it's helping increase awareness for the general public. It doesn't understand that there are governments actively investigating UFOs, taking this seriously. This is a government body making this announcement, showing that UFOs are a serious subject that is being looked at by a government body. Good and, job, guys.
And scientists. And yes. That's what's cool, the scientists, because what's cool about the arena of science, when it comes to government, you know, it's our government or their government. When it comes to scientists and scientific findings and people working on science, you know, the scientific community is a worldwide community, a global community. And so when you have scientists anywhere working on something, you know, this is a scientific community working on something. There is no really borders when it comes to science. So, it's all really exciting.
And forget government bodies investigating UFOs. It's so bizarre but true that there is still a large portion of the mainstream public in the United States who is completely uneducated on anything to do with UFOs, where they're still of the opinion that only people in the U.S. see UFOs. Why don't the rest of the world, people in the rest of the world see UFOs? And that is not the case. So again, a story like this highlights that UFOs are not a silly thing in the U.S. that people are making up. It's a global phenomenon. And there are bodies, official bodies, looking into this and taking it quite seriously, as they should.
Yeah. Yep.
Way to go, Sefa. Love those guys.
All right, cool. Well, there's some news. Of course, people can get more news on Spacing Out. We didn't have one Friday, right? But we'll have one coming up this Friday.
Correctamundo.
So get some more news there. And so thank you, Jason, for joining us once again for the news from this time from Boise, Idaho. You enjoy your cool weather out there. We had it like 110 degrees yesterday, which was super hot. But
well, the people here are complaining because there's a heat wave, and I think we're going to get up to maybe 95 today.
Oh, geez. So it's got to feel pretty nice for you, huh?
Oh, it's like winter for me right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure. And I urge people, check out our website, openminds.tv. We have so much news on there right now.
Yeah, like crazy news. So let's go ahead and talk to Frank Kimbler about his latest news. I am very excited to welcome back to the show our friend Frank Kimbler. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful, Alejandro. It's good to be on the show again.
So it was really cool to see you again in Roswell. It's funny that I realized this year it's something like my 7th year of, for some crazy reason, driving for 10 hours in the heat to go out to this little town in the middle of the New Mexican desert to enjoy this festival every year.
Well, you know what? It's like one of the premier UFO places on Earth. I mean, where else on the planet do you have historical information that says that a UFO actually crashed in this very spot? There's some information out there like that, but they're kind of few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really exciting it's a great case. It's fun to go out there to talk with people and, you know, just be out there and, you know, and maybe you felt like this, you know, to be out there and to just look at the planes out there and think, wow, something like that could have or maybe even most likely happened out here.
You know what? Every time I go out, every time I go out to the debris field, and a lot of times I do go out there by myself, and it's always kind of an eerie feeling to stand there, because to realize that something that was unknown, something that that mystified us completely, crashed in the very ground that you're walking on just leaves me spellbound every time I go out there.
Mm-hmm. Really cool stuff. So, you know, as Hey, Professor, and I know we've talked a lot about your background, and we're going to talk more about updates on things you had found, but, you know, you teach at the military, New Mexico Military Institute out there, some high school, some college classes,
that's right.
Mostly geology, is that correct?
That is correct. I teach geology on the college side, and then on the high school side, I teach earth science, but that encompasses oceanography, meteorology, astronomy. It covers geology. It covers anything having to do with the science of the earth and our solar system. I cover all of that.
Yeah. So perfect, you know, knowledge base for investigating this stuff. But when you came to Roswell, did you already have an idea, or did you already feel that most likely Roswell was an anomalous event or explainable? So what, I guess, was your experience going through your mind the first time you went to go visit those fields?
You know what? When I first came out to Roswell, and I've talked about this before, it was 6 months before I even went down to the UFO Museum. But then I knew the Roswell story. I had read about it, and I was, when I moved out here, I got very interested in the history behind it. And then what I wanted to do is use, you know, I went through the museum, I read all the stories, I read all the books, looked at all the documentaries that were out there in reference to it, and I'm going, you know what, this is a cool story, and we've got some wonderful firsthand. But I wanted to try to find some physical evidence is what I wanted to do, and because that is something that everybody wants. Everybody wants to have the touchy-feely in their hand that actually proves that we have been visited by extraterrestrials. And I don't mean something where everybody talks about the Holy Grail, which is something that has the properties that can't be explained by anything on Earth, where it can't be anything but extraterrestrial. But I'm just talking about a piece of metal or an artifact that when we do some testing on it, and it's backed up by the scientific community, that actually proves beyond a doubt that we have that something happened either in Roswell or any place else in the world, because we want that physical evidence. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do, was basically put my knowledge together as a scientist and try to find some physical evidence that proves that what happened at Roswell.
And how does it feel now? You know, you haven't been out there too many years, right? How long has it been now?
Five years, I guess.
Yeah.
Five, maybe 6 years.
So here we are 5 years later, and now you're in my mind, and I think in their mind too, an important part of the Roswell Museum group, and of an important researcher, and now you're speaking, you know, last couple years at their annual event. How does it feel to all of a sudden find yourself so embroiled in the whole thing?
Well, for one thing, it's turned into almost a passion for me, because it's a passion, it's a hobby, and I get to use science to figure this stuff out. But you know what? I tell people that I'm my own worst skeptic. I am not a skeptic about the Roswell event anymore, because based upon things that I have found, people that I have talked to, firsthand knowledge, of these events, things that have happened, I know that the Roswell crash occurred. I know that it was something that the government covered up, and I'm going to prove this. I'm going to get the physical evidence out there, and this is exciting for me, because it's like it's going into unknown territory. And you know what? I don't think there's a single person out there that doesn't like the mystery behind seeking the unknown, and that's in trying to get an answer, and that's what I love. This is like a treasure hunt, and I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I mean, you know, in so few years, thinking of people like Don Schmidt or his partner there, Tom Carey, they've been doing this for a long time, and I would say now you are up there with those guys and doing some of the most exciting stuff around Roswell.
You know, it's a little bit different because those guys do the witness testimonies,
right.
Which without them, I would have never been able to do what I do, because I've used their information to go out and look for things and apply it to the science. They do wonderful work, and I have deep respect for all of them. Stanton Friedman, Don Schmidt, Tom Carey, Kevin Randall, all those people that have worked on Roswell for so long. And you know what? Because of the work that I do, we talk to each other. We're good friends, and we collaborate on things, and it's nice it's nice to be recognized, Alejandro. It really is, because people know that I do good work, and that I'm not that I seek the truth, and I'm not trying to hide anything, and I shove stuff out there, and I try to tell the facts the way I see it, and I think I've gained a lot of respect and a lot of integrity, especially for the UFO community out mm-hmm. there, which is something that we really needed.
Yeah, for sure. And what's cool is, you know, exactly what you do complements what they do so well. And essentially, we'll start to get into the details here. So, and one of the things I want to ask, you know, given your expertise, is really the story that the debris was cleaned up by a bunch of soldiers shoulder to shoulder combing over the area. That would seem to get a lot of it. But it seems if at a crash site where pieces can be small, it would seem practically impossible that they got everything. Do you think they could have gotten everything?
No, it would be unless they removed a foot or more of soil over an entire almost a square mile of land, they could have never gotten it all. I mean, it was rainy that day, it was storming, stuff could have been washed down holes, covered up with there would be no physical way that they could have gotten it all. And I base this on something, Alejandro. I've been up to a broken arrow site that's just outside of Albuquerque, and a broken arrow site's where we lose an atom bomb or a hydrogen bomb or something. And one of those, I think it was in 1957, dropped out of an airplane on approach to the air base outside of right there in Albuquerque. And
we almost nuked ourselves.
That's right, we almost did. Well, that thing, it basically broke through the bottom of the bomb bay door because they hit a turbulent. It hit the ground. Now, luckily, the hydrogen bomb did not go off. Otherwise, Albuquerque would not be there. But it. Right. Did have some explosive ordnance that went off on the inside and scattered materials of one of our most closely guarded, absolutely above top secret things, scattered material over almost a square mile. And they went out there and cleaned it up, and they bulldozed it and got rid of everything. Well, they said they got rid of everything, and I have lots of fragments of that. And
really?
So yeah, I have pieces of electronics. I have sheets of the Duraloy alloy that was used for the casing for the hydrogen bomb, and it's pretty amazing. Friends of mine have pieces of stuff that they have found out there too. Now it's all sealed up. They won't let anybody out there anymore. But it is so to say that the government the government finds it all, it's not true. We've had crash landings of the older version of the SR-71, which was the Blackbird, the ultra-secret spy plane, and there was lots of crashes early on of that plane, and they tried to clean that up. But you can go out to those sites today and find artifacts of where that thing hit. So you know what? I think the idea of cleaning up a UFO, if it disintegrated or blew up in our on approach or had some kind of catastrophic failure of some time, there would be parts everywhere. People are still finding parts of the shuttle that blew up. So it's and it blew up in the atmosphere. So mm-hmm. it would be impossible. So that's what I base my research on.
Mm-hmm. So that's incredible. I mean, that's a great example of you going out to that site where and finding those pieces of the atomic bomb. And what's good about that is or why it's a good parallel is because that is something they actively tried to clean up, because of course they don't want people finding those pieces, but they weren't able to do it. So then you go out and you decide, I'm going to find pieces of this craft that crashed out here that, you know, closer to Corona, but at the, what, the Foster Ranch area.
Yeah, the Foster Ranch, you bet.
And you have found pieces, and at least so far, to get an update, because we've gone over a lot of these details previously, but you did find a piece, one of those pieces you got analyzed, and I think the holy grail, to use that term again, of kind of metallurgy analysis to find out whether it's made here or elsewhere is an isotopic test. Is that correct?
That's the fingerprint, is to get an isotope, because the isotopes on Earth are unique for every element, and in combinations of those individual isotopes are unique. When you get out into space, there's alterations into that, and we can tell the difference between a meteorite that's we can look at the isotopes in a meteorite, we know that it's not from Earth. We can look at moon rocks, we know that it's from the moon and not from Earth. We can even look at the isotopes from Mars rocks, and yes, we do have some meteorites that have crashed on Earth, and it has a different isotope ratio to it, and this meant a different fingerprint. So we can see that it is the one. Probably, I apologize for that. The isotopes are so very, very important, and they are a dead giveaway when it comes to tracking down what things are. If you don't have some kind of magical property like the foil that when you know that works like nitinol, when you squeeze it in your hand, it kind of unfolds naturally, and you know, stuff that's so incredibly hard that you can't shoot through it, or even with a bullet or whatever. But the isotopes tell us what we want to know. They tell us whether something is of extraterrestrial origin or not.
Mm-hmm. And now, what you have found, you've been able to determine, is a manufactured aluminum. And the test you've done thus far was came back that it most likely was of extraterrestrial origin, which means that manufactured somewhere other than Earth. However, it fit into an error margin. Is that correct?
Now, that's the very first one that I had done was called AH1, stands for anthill, which is where it was found in. I had the testing done on that, and the isotope showed that it was so far off of the line for Earth that it couldn't be anything else but extraterrestrial. But the problem came into the fact that there's also a very large error factor. So it works like this. We have a 50-50 chance. This thing is either the specimen was either definitely of extraterrestrial origin, or there was such an error margin in there that it was just normal and it was not right. And that's an error factor, call it an error from the lab or the error factor in the analytical work. And the only way to back that up would be to have a second test done. And to run a standard next to it side by side. And what had happened on that was, and this was out on the internet as well, the AH1 fragment is very, very small, and it was sent out in more than not tracked properly, even though it went out Federal Express, and it never arrived at its it got to the destination, but it wasn't in the package. So we lost so much of AH1 that we were not and I got kind of scared, paranoid, because it disappeared right out of the package, and I haven't been able to figure that out yet. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't get that.
I mean, you packaged it up, you put it in the container, it got to the location. When, and it was actually here, right, locally by me.
That's right. It was it went to ASU. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
And she opens it up in the lab, and there's nothing there.
It's not in the package.
Strange.
The research scientist was literally in tears when she called me up on the phone, and of course I made a big to do out of it, and I shouldn't have done. I was very unprofessional the way I handled myself,
You got really upset. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I got really, really upset about that, and of course I kind of plastered it all over the internet, and I shouldn't have done that because it was bad public relations for the Arizona ASU.
Oh.
And I think because of that, they didn't want to make another attempt at analyzing, although they do have the equipment to look at it. I wish they would. I wish they would reconsider, because I would hand deliver the piece to them if they would like to redo it.
Well, on their end, too, they might be thinking, we don't know this guy. Is he trying to play a trick on us by not putting it in there? And so it's an unfortunate situation on both ends. And, of course, knowing you and you having done a test before, you obviously are trying to get the work done. And I'm sure you were very excited for the prospect, this opportunity. And, yeah, it's so – I mean, you hear about these things, and a lot of people sometimes roll their eyes. Yeah, right. Evidence disappearing. That's right. But this happened to you.
It happened, and I was a victim of it. It won't happen again, ever, because I have safeguards in place to make sure that we don't that type of thing doesn't happen again, and it won't. Now there's been some other specimens that have been tested as well. So we still need to have AH1 tested again, and I've been making that promise for a number of years now. It hasn't been done yet, only because the piece is very small that's left. So when it gets done, there's going to be absolutely nothing left of it, and I need to find the time and of course, the funding to get it done. And it's not that much. It's it all depends upon what we want done. It's it could be as little as $1,000 or as much as $7,000 to get it analyzed. It depends upon what's done to it and who does the work.
Is a very important part. Who does the work, right?
Yeah, you need to have a certified lab do it. So it's and there's probably maybe half a dozen or a dozen labs that can actually look at these very, very tiny specimens that are out there, and they can do that. NASA could do the work in a heartbeat. Los Alamos could do the work, but getting them to do it is the next thing. They could determine this really quick and let the world know whether this is actually a piece of ET or not. They have the equipment. They can look at stuff that's smaller than a tenth the size of a period at the end of a sentence. It's just that getting them to do it, that's difficult to do.
Well, and in your defense, if I'm not mistaken, over this period of time, there have been people who have kind of dangled the carrot in front of you, like namely some television production groups that have said, oh, we'll help you get the analysis, and then they don't come through. Am I right?
This is very, very true, but there is one group that they did have some analytical work done, but they haven't done they never did the isotope work done on it. On at least one specimen, and this was really a cool thing because it was actually a documentary that was funded by the Smithsonian Institute. The documentary, the film crew actually caught me. Everybody was there when I found a fragment. So it was well documented, and this was just a few months ago that this happened. So they caught it. They caught it on film. They saw me dig it up. I photographed it. They photographed it. It was, I'll have to say that Ben Hansen from Fact or Faked was with me when it happened. And of course he's an ex-FBI agent, and he has all kinds of really good, he's a very respectable research person as well. And not only that, they actually had it tested up at, University of New Mexico, UNM, and also they had it tested at New Mexico Tech. I will say this, that the results that, and I was not at New Mexico Tech, although Don Schmidt and a few other people were there when it was being done, they said that the material was not a can and it was not aircraft. So, and that they just left it at that. So there's no isotope work. That was supposed to be the next step, but from what I heard, they didn't get the funding for it, and it sort of got nixed because from what I heard, the Smithsonian didn't want to chase UFOs.
Wow, unfortunate. But do you have the piece though now?
Not that one. They actually still have that one in their possession.
Do you have similar? What was this? Was this another aluminum type?
This was
of material?
Another. This no, it's almost identical to some of the other stuff that I found out there. I have to tell you right now, Alejandro, that I'm up to probably 25 fragments of material from the debris field,
and this is material that you find anomalous.
That is correct. And it's scattered all within the several hundred yards wide by 3/4 mile long zone. It has all come from within that zone, all of it, in different places.
Is all of this material an aluminum type of material or different ones?
Well, most of it's aluminum, and I recently had some plastic analyzed that I am really, really excited about. Now, some of the metal's been analyzed. There's only been two of them that have been analyzed using isotopes, and I had another one analyzed. It was done by a reputable lab, but it was not a lab that was certified. It came back as being slightly anomalous on the isotope side, and it was very close to the line, but that had such a small error factor that this one is a 50-50 chance. Or not 50-50. This one is very close to terrestrial, but it needs to be on the line, and it was not. But the error factor is also very, very small on this. So this one needs testing because it came out as showing slightly extraterrestrial in origin, but not near as bad as or not near as good as the one that was the previous one. And then I've had some other work done on just some analytical work done on some other fragments, and one of them came out as being an alloy that doesn't have a match, and it has almost 2% phosphorus in it, and I have yet to figure that one out because phosphorus is not something that you normally find in metals. I have no idea where it came from. Mm-hmm. It's a mystery to me.
What's great about what you do and your knowledge, too, and having your expertise, this was kind of demonstrated recently on another sample, was found during one of Don Schmidt's digs by a local person here. It was the Phoenix MUFON helped them out with one of their digs, and they had found something that he had analyzed because this gentleman had access to a lab, and the materials that came back were not consistent with like the shell of a bullet. However, having expertise such as yours, you were able to determine that those other elements would be something you would find on something that's aged or had been in the ground in that area. There are so many other factors involved.
You know what? Yeah, and that's true. There was a specimen that was found during an archaeological expedition, so to speak, out at the debris field, and I was not there when it was discovered, but they showed it to me because I showed up the next day, and they showed it to me, and I'm going, this looks a lot like the material that I found. They took it back and they had it tested, and they said, oh my gosh, this has all kinds of miraculous properties. And I said, well, can you send me the data? And they sent me the information. I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. The close-up pictures show crimp marks, and the crimp marks look like the crimp marks that you would find on a bullet casing. Like a brass jacket, a hollow point or something. And then what I did was I looked at their analytical results from a certified lab. I looked at the analytical results, and I matched it up, and it ended up being what's called the gilding metal for a half bracket brass jacket at hollow point. So it actually ended up being a bullet casing. And they got a little bit upset about that. But you know what? Everybody, Alejandro, including myself, we want to have physical evidence of extraterrestrials in our hand so bad that sometimes it clouds our thinking. And we get excited, and I see this. I get excited too, and we make mistakes, and sometimes we have to temper ourselves a little bit and kind of take a look at the facts, follow the science. It's what NASA does. They go follow the water or follow the whatever on Mars and follow the water and you'll find life. Well, you know what? If you follow the facts and do good science, you'll get your answers.
Yeah. Well, and you were able to, in that case, which was enlightening for me to show, you know, because they said, well, like, for instance, here's an element that shouldn't be here. And you were able to demonstrate, well, actually, it could. And here's the reasons why.
Yes.
But, for example, when you're talking about the phosphorus and this aluminum, there are no, at least to your knowledge, no reasons such as, you know, where it was or being rubbed by something else or coming in contact with the ground or liquids or something like that.
Up with a couple of crazy ideas that I'm still trying to chase. One of them is that a cow chewed it, and they laugh because the saliva in a cow's mouth is has a high phosphorus content.
Oh.
And the other one, and how it got into the aluminum, I have no idea. But and then the other idea was that our government used phosphorus bombs to basically clean up the area during the Roswell from the Roswell debris field, because they may have thought it was contaminated. Anything that was left over, they used phosphorus bombs to melt it and clean it up to make sure that it would disappear.
Interesting.
It's, you know, fire's been used for a long time to clean stuff up, and we used phosphorus bombs in World War II, and it's a very effective way to clean up stuff, and it is a distinct possibility.
Wow. So, and that's what's cool about these metals, too, is that at least with your finding, and you've done these couple of isotopic tests, I mean, often those sorts of tests are able to rule out an extraterrestrial origin, but you have not been able to prove your null hypothesis yet. You haven't been able to rule that out yet.
I can't rule it out entirely, not yet. Mm-hmm. I keep coming up with anomalies, so in the more I test, the more anomalies I get. You know, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell you guys about this piece of plastic.
You read my mind. I was just about to say, please tell me more about the plastic.
This plastic is pretty interesting. When I found it, I about had a heart attack. Of course, I do that every time I'm out there looking around. But what was weird about it is the descriptions of the Bakelite plastic that Jesse Marcel gave, Jr., and the description of it was something that was on the order of the thickness of a phonograph record, and it was a dark in color. Kind of interesting, when I found this, I'm going, oh my gosh, this is the thickness of a phonograph record and it's dark in color. Mm-hmm. And I immediately made arrangements to have it analyzed. And the interesting thing about it is that it came back as being a it's a phenolic resin that is very similar to Bakelite, and it had some interesting things in it. It's got quartz in it as a filler. It's been exposed to excessive amounts of heat because it's melted. And from what I can see, and I'm actually looking at the data right now, and according to the report, this material basically was used to coat something to protect it from heat.
How interesting.
So it's almost like thermal it's a thermal heat shield material of some kind.
And maybe for those who aren't familiar, if you can kind of explain what Bakelite was, because it's not something that's used often anymore, correct?
Oh no, we might use a little bit of it, but it was our early versions of what we take it for granted for. We make plastic everything today. You know, today we use like polyvinyl chloride or whatever to make all kinds of plastic things with, and we use nylon, and long before nylon came out and the other ones, we used Bakelite. They used Bakelite for everything. Electrical fixtures, they used Bakelite to make car parts and handles and everything. Back in the like 40s and 50s, Bakelite was used extensively to make plastic ornaments and things out of it. It's what we used. That was our background for things.
It kind of has a cool like a hardness. And why did we stop using it? Too brittle or?
Yeah, it's brittle. It also catches fire pretty darn easy too. So it's something that we sort of done away with. We don't use Bakelite anymore. You can find it on a lot of really old cars and things like that, and old electronics. It's still used a little bit in electronics industry, so you just don't find it much out there anymore. But this particular material that I found is basically it's an epoxy based phenolic resin. Which is really weird because this stuff was found in the middle of nowhere, probably 1,000 feet from any trail or road, basically laying on the ground. And how it got out there, I don't know. But the cool thing is epoxy was not used until after 1950, and the Roswell crash was 1947. So how in the world this stuff got out there, I have no idea. Why it's melted, I have no idea. There are traces of titanium on it, which might be from the paint. I know for a fact that it was used as a coating to protect something from excessive amounts of heat, and it has been exposed to excessive amounts of heat. This is a mystery. It sort of fits the description of the material described by eyewitnesses that have held the material in their hand. But once again, to try to prove that this is – and this is an organic thing – so to try to prove that this is of extraterrestrial origin, this is far and above my expertise. But I do have a piece of plastic here that I have found that shouldn't be out there. It is out there, and I don't know how it got there, and it matches descriptions of what people gave. So this is the kind of stuff that makes me excited. Mm-hmm. It is an incredible anomaly. It's the material was not used until the 1950s, yet it's out there in the middle of nowhere, and I don't know how it got there.
Mm-hmm. So is it something very similar or to something that we manufacture?
Yeah, it looks similar to some of the stuff that we might use in the electronics industry. It could be used as a coating on, it's really thick, so it's not something that would be used to coat like an engine part or something. It's not a paint. This stuff is really thick. I've had some people come back and say, well, maybe it's a piece of the space shuttle. No, it's too old. It's been laying around out there for a long time. Because it was all covered with dirt and it's got like mold growing through the upper surfaces of it and stuff. Could it be something that was dropped out there at a later date or fell off of something? I suppose it could be. That's all part of the science behind this. Considering where I found it, I have, like I said, there's no roads, no trails, no people, no nothing within at least 1,000 feet of this. And so it is essentially in the middle of nowhere, and I don't know how it got there. And could it be something from us? Yeah, sure, it could be. But it doesn't fit the norm of there's no trash. I have to explain that a little bit. The area out there that I was in, there's no camper trash, there's no people. It's just not there. It's too far off the beaten track, and I just, like I said, I get excited about this because even the person that did the analytical work on this, and she's very good. It is Phyllis Bundinger. She did the work on this, and she is an excellent scientist. And she referred to it as the following thing. She says, "Well, gee, Frank, this is what I call a WTF moment." That is exactly what this is, and I have no idea.
Wow, pretty strange. What would be the next step with that? Can you do an isotopic evaluation on something like that?
I don't know. I've got this. This is a fairly large piece. This is something that I need to have somebody that is an expert in basically plastics, in epoxy phenolic resins. to basically, this is something that's outside of my realm, because I, you know, the metallic stuff I can do, but this organic chemistry is above me. You know, I can look at the spectra of this, I can look at the descriptions of it, and I'm going, what the heck? But this is, I'm not an organic chemist, and this is going to take a really good plastics chemist to take a look at this to try to figure out if this is of extraterrestrial origin or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't answer it.
So if there are any listening, get a hold of us and let us know.
Oh, I would welcome some. I haven't posted this data yet, but I'll put it out there for the whole world to see. Or I can send it to Open Minds and you guys can post it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm more than delighted to stick this out there for the whole world to see. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can help shed some light on it, figure out what it is, because it's above my knowledge as an Earth scientist. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back to school and learn a whole bunch about plastics, which I don't mind doing. I like to learn stuff, but this is above me.
Well, that was one of the fun things when you know, we posted your original story with the isotopic work you had done, is that people who knew what you were talking about kind of were able to get on there, and there was at least, you know, three or four people, right, maybe more, that you heard from, where they knew their stuff and they were asking you questions and kind of taking you to task. But at least from what I could see, you know, at least everything that you had said had really upheld, because you were very careful about how you spoke about all of this.
Well, you know what? I got a very interesting email from Hal Putoff, and he is well known in research circles. So man's been nominated 3 times for a Nobel Prize in physics. He sent me an email, and the email said, "Frank, I know exactly what you're talking about and where you're coming from, and you do need to get a second test to verify that it's of extraterrestrial origin." So you know what? He didn't discount what I said. He simply said that you really do need to get a second test, which is where we ran into a problem, with getting the second test done and having the fragment disappear. But you know what? That made me feel really good to get that kind of feedback. I've had several scientists come back and say, "Frank, you've done really, really good work on this." And then I've also had some that have said, "All right, the error factor was really big." And I'm going, "Yeah, I know it was." And how can you claim it's of extraterrestrial? And I says, "Well, I'm saying that it is either extraterrestrial, or if it falls into that, or it was an error, it falls into that error zone. And the only way to do it is to test it again, but this time test it side by side with a known sample that's from Earth, and we'll have our answer."
Mm-hmm. So are there any current plans to do that?
I just need to get off my hiney and do it. I think that the UFO Museum would be more than delighted, and I just need to take the time to do this. I'm a little reluctant to send things out now. I would much rather hand deliver these things, and so finding a lab that's close by that I can hand deliver to when I'm teaching, that's the hard part. You know, during the summer I got tied up. I could have done it during the summer, but it's tough to like fly places and drive places and be able to teach school at the same time.
Right.
But I know what to do to track things now, so that if it disappears, it would actually end up being something that would be like well televised practically, and it would certainly cause quite the stir if it did disappear, because now I take all kinds of precautions and stuff. So I suppose I could send it out and take all those necessary precautions to make sure that nothing happens to it. So I would like to have it tested before the UFO Congress, so we can get some answers. That would be really, really pretty exciting news. No matter what came back, we would have it.
That's right, because I think I heard that you're going to be one of the speakers.
I'm looking forward to that, and I'm going to talk about the UFO artifacts, not just mine, but probably worldwide, because there's a number of things in what we need to do And then I'm going to talk about Roswell and how, you know, what I've done and the mistakes that I've made and how we go about doing this the right way. And hopefully we'll have some really good updated information by then.
Oh, that'll be so cool. Really excited to have you at the conference. That's for sure.
I'm excited. That's for sure.
So you have the aluminum type stuff. You have the plastics. Is there anything else you found?
Oh, yeah, there is. There's a piece of iron. And the only reason why I know this thing is iron is because it is magnetic. It has been manufactured. In other words, it shows that it's been machined. It almost looks like a part of an I-beam, and I hate to say that word because I-beam plays into the story of Roswell, but this thing is not lightweight. The only reason why I know it's iron because I measured its density. Its density matches that of iron, so it has a specific gravity. It is magnetic. The odd thing about it, it was buried in the ground about 2 or 3 inches deep, and it has not a speck of rust on it, and it's not stainless. So this piece has not been tested at all, and I've looked, and it's undergone a lot of stress. I've gotten so I can recognize some certain things from pictures and stuff, and this particular fragment has undergone a great deal of stretching and pulling. I hate to use the word explosively, but this stuff has been stressed to the max. It's been ripped apart, literally shredded. I have no idea how it got that way, and this was one that was also found in the middle of nowhere where it should not have been. How it got there, I don't know. But you know what? There was no other iron trash around, no other pieces of aluminum. This was in a very, very small sinkhole, off the beaten path, no trails, no nothing going. And I even had trouble getting into the hole myself. I have no idea how the piece got there. It's a mystery to me. It's the only thing I found in the sinkhole. And I don't know what it is, other than I do know that it's probably iron-based, and I have no analytical data on that fragment whatsoever, and that's another one that needs to be tested.
Mm-hmm. Wow, cool. So, I mean, you're out there finding stuff, and what's kind of neat about this and what it makes me think about is, you know, this is kind of an area where, I mean, this is what should be doing, being done. It's something that I know Don Schmidt tries to do it, but he doesn't live in Roswell, so he's getting out there and doing his putting together his digs once a year. But it seems like important work given the mystery of Roswell, and you're actually finding stuff.
You know, that's the interesting part about this is simply because every time I go out there, it's like a treasure hunt, and then I get excited because everything you find, there's a possibility that some of it might be from another world, which gets me really excited when I think about stuff like that. This is the kind of work that needs to be done not only on Roswell, but this is the kind of work that needs to be done at other locations where crashes have occurred, and it takes a lot of dedication. There's many times that I've gone out to the debris field and have found absolutely nothing. I've gone out there 2 or 3 days in a row and have found nothing. And then I've been out there swinging a metal detector for 6 hours and found nothing. And then just before I go, I find something. This is a lot of people don't have that drive. In fact, my son said to me, "Dad, how can you go around out here and swing a metal detector all day long out in the middle of nowhere?" And I says, "Well, think of everything you find has the possibility of being of extraterrestrial origin." And I says, "That in itself is a piece of history, and it could be world-shattering history if it does ever test out to be a piece of an extraterrestrial spacecraft."
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, were you to do more tests and, you know, maybe the next do a couple more, they both come back as, you know, off the scale, outside the region of error, extraterrestrial, I think, you know, a lot of people would be paying attention.
I think they would, too. And that's what it takes. It takes some diligence. It takes persistence. It takes some severe kind of dedication. It also takes quite a bit of money, and I'm glad that that very little of the funding for any of this research has come out of my pocket, other than some gasoline bills. Most of it's been paid for by other people, and I really, really appreciate the people that have helped. The International UFO Museum, one of my friends has helped me out with some analysts, some funding for this. I do have to say that a little bit of research was done by people like the, I got to mention their name, because they funded the documentary. It was the Smithsonian people. They funded stuff. And you know what? Even people do come up with a little bit of money, and I have to thank them for that. We just need a lot more to get this done the right way.
I think one of the things that I really like about what you're doing is there are a lot of people out there who have gotten pieces of metal or implants, honestly, and have done some very cursory kind of analysis and jumped to the conclusion that what they have is extraterrestrial. But what you've done at least is continue to do the work as it's supposed to be done to determine if something actually is, of something. You can't just rest on your laurels and say, just because I think it is, this is what it is. And a lot of times, and there's a big misperception with a lot of this stuff out there, that it is more anomalous than it actually is.
This is true because I hate to say this, there's call them the group of fanatics if you want to, and I hate to use that word because that kind of, that's the crazies, the fanatics of the world, whatever. They'll pick up something, and almost everything they pick up is alien or extraterrestrial origin, and it doesn't matter what they pick up, and they get very jaded. That's not good science. It is important to follow the scientific method. Get your facts. Look at all the alternatives, because what's going to happen is the scientific community, as well as the folks in the media world that are smart, they're going to come back and they are going to rip you apart if it's not right. Mm-hmm. And this is what has to be done. Now I've been ripped apart a little bit, but because I follow some fairly good science, it's minimal, because they know that I don't do good work. Sometimes it's not what they want to hear, but it does play an important role in getting this word out. We can promote all kinds of things. We can put together hoaxes. People could put together all kinds of things, but it doesn't stand up. I don't know. It might stand up for a year or two, but it doesn't stand up. But if you have good information, if you know what I'm getting at here, if you have good facts and good science behind stuff, then it'll stand up the test. And that's what has to be done. And maybe I'm rambling on here, but this is there are people out there that everything they pick up is from a UFO. And that's not right.
Right. And not just fanatics. Some people are, I think, their heart's in the right place. They just don't have the knowledge base or the understanding of science or how it works.
Yeah, and this is very true. They're passionate. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what I said, that we all want to have that proof of extraterrestrial visitations, the physical proof in our hand. There's people that want that so bad. I would like to see that myself. But it's got to be done the right way, and we just can't pick up something and do some cursory, and I love the test where people take a piece of metal and put it in a Tesla coil and have it fly around, and then they claim it's of extraterrestrial origin because it flies around. I love this, because I'll tell you right now that you could take a piece of dried cow manure and put it in a Tesla field, and it will also fly.
How do you know it's not an alien cow?
How do you know it's not an alien cow? That's very true. But it's a good science is going to tell us. And if we just get it done the right way, then it's going to stand up. But there is that group that try. They just don't have the knowledge base. And you know what? We need more people. We need more scientists. I hate to say this, like myself, and even better, that don't mind doing this, but they have a tendency to shy away because they think it's going to hurt their professional standings or whatever big university they work at. I don't care. I do this from the standpoint of a hobby, and as long as I do it and I'm honest and dedicated, the key word here is honest about it. That's all that matters, because I know in my heart when I get whatever answer it is and throw it out there, it's going to be the right one.
Mm-hmm. And along these lines, you know, well, a couple points real quick. One point in the question was that a lot of people will try to pin me down. Well, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What do you think of, for instance, the implants? And I've always got to say, you know, I'm not an expert. I have to rely on, or why don't you write about this? Why don't you write that this is ET stuff? I got to rely on the experts. If I don't have an expert who can tell me that this is anomalous and why it's anomalous, I do not have the expertise to make those claims. And along these lines, speaking of the implants, at least one of those analysis, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, is that you've looked at and you've seen and you agreed with the analysis that at least it was appeared to be meteoric.
Yes. No, I've actually seen that, and I've seen some of that data that's out there, and some we have lots of little micrometeorites that strike the Earth all the time, and it actually gets down, and to have somebody, you know, it might hurt like the Dickens, or maybe feel like a deer fly bite or something. But there's always that possibility that that people are getting, you know, they're getting nailed by these little pieces of meteorite, and then they show up a few years later and have the thing removed. And
In your mind, though, does it also at least lend to the possibility that maybe it is? I mean, is your feeling that it is possible that people have, you know, little machines or implants from extraterrestrials given to them during an abduction?
I can't answer that question because I'm not an expert. It would take somebody that is an expert in maybe nano engineering, and it's outside of my realm. Yeah. There are, you know, there could be some things out there that we just don't yet understand because we don't have the technology to understand it. Our only basis for stuff is what we see, but there could be and there could be some things out there that we cannot explain, and there could be some science that we do not understand that to us would be magic, but to whoever created it would be standard engineering practices for them. Who knows? I can't answer that question. I mean, not honestly, because I'm not an expert enough. I know that I've seen some of the data, and some of it, you know, looks like the stuff might be a meteorite, and that's a distinct possibility. And if it's a meteorite, maybe it's of extraterrestrial origin. I mean, that's what meteorites are. They're from space, so it's a distinct possibility. But this idea about, you know, fields and little antenna and everything, if I were a nano engineer, which we do have because that's a budding young science for us, that whole idea of you know, making microscopic machines and electronics, it's not far-fetched. It's a possibility, but I don't have the expertise to answer it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, thank you so much for we've already ran out of time, but this documentary with the Smithsonian, when is that coming out? Do you know?
You know what? I heard that it is either airing or has already started to air in Canada.
Wow.
And the idea was that it may or may not ever air in the United States.
What?
But that's what I heard.
Those Canadians.
I don't know, but it's actually on like the Smithsonian Channel in Canada, or it was supposed to air on it. I haven't heard anything back from the production company on that at all. I would love to see it because Ben Hansen was on it with me. You know, Don Schmidt was there. I was there, and it was exciting, and it was the people that produced it make some of the best science documentaries that are out there. The people were great. They were wonderful and very professional.
Well, I'm excited because I spent time with Ben and you in Roswell. Ben was talking about it. I saw him again in MUFON, and he's obviously really excited about this program. He got me really excited about the program, so I better be able to watch it, dang it.
I would like to see it myself.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, cool. So we'll look forward to that. We'll also look forward to you being at the UFO Congress. So hopefully people will come out to check you out there.
I'm looking forward to coming out and talking about the science of xenoarchaeology. I'd love that.
Ooh, nice. So I like it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show again. You have a great semester. What do you guys say when the semester starts? Do you have a term like, you know, like in show business, break your leg, or is it just have a great year or something?
No, it's usually, isn't it time for a vacation?
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you have a vacation soon, but your classes start the day
Monday.
This airs, Monday, right?
Awesome. I'm going to tell everybody to go out to Open Minds and that's
yeah,
where it's
first day of class.
I'm going to tell them to go out and listen to the show.
Perfect. That'll be awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, man.
You're welcome. Take care, Alejandro.
Thank you so much to Frank Kimbler for once again coming to share with us all of his latest updates. I think what he's doing is some of the most exciting stuff. It's some real science going on. And I think it's great that we've got him and we're able to talk to him. And it's going to be really cool to introduce his work to a lot of you who have not met him or been able to see, you know, more details when it comes to his work at the UFO Congress. So be sure to come to the UFO Congress and check him out. Remember, that is February 18th to the 22nd. Right now, if you register by September 5th, you get a major discount. You get 5 days of speakers for $200. So it's an incredible, awesome deal. And I think, you know, we're posting some of our speakers right now, most of them actually, up on the website so you can see more speakers being posted practically on a daily basis right now. And we have some surprises coming up, it looks like. So some really, really groundbreaking cool stuff coming up that you're going to see. So you definitely want to go to the Congress. Reserve your room, like I always tell you, as soon as possible, because at the host hotel where we stay, those rooms go really quick and we sell out every year. And we have some other close hotels, but if you want to stay in the main one, which is just a gorgeous hotel, and our deal is you get like 50% off the room price, so you'll definitely want to check that out. So go to ufocongress.com, come check out Frank Kimbler, and again, thanks Frank for being on the show. Also, be sure to check out all the news that Jason and I talked about at openminds.tv. You can also go to our site there and watch Spacing Out every week, where our YouTube show, where you'll be able to see more UFO news. And we'll have another one coming up this Friday. And what else is going on? Our videos. So we're posting videos from the International UFO Congress in the past, the lectures there, on our video portal. And so for just a couple bucks, you can go watch the videos instead of having to order a DVD, because if you're like me, I have not touched my DVD Blu-ray machine in months, but I'm watching movies all the time or TV shows because I'm watching them on Netflix or I'm watching them on HBO Go. I mean, everything's online these days, so we're going online. So go to our video portal. You can also get a subscription for just a few dollars a month, and it's really, really cheap, and then you'll have access to all of our videos, and we're posting more and more videos on a monthly basis. So you got to check that out. We have like Jim Mars up there. We have a lot of really good lectures, classic stuff you can't get anywhere else. So go check that out. And then I also want to say thank you to Caleb Hanks, who does the opening and close music. You could go check him out at theclerkchronicles.com. He does some really cool music, and you can download it for free. So thank you, Caleb. And thank you all so much for listening. You guys rock. And it's so nice to meet you guys at some of these conferences like Contact in the Desert and Roswell and stuff. So come to the Congress and say hi. Give us a shake our hand, or you could usually, you know, we're usually pretty open to hugs too. Sometimes people like to give us hugs, and we like that. Who wouldn't want to hug that cute little Jason McClellan fella. I want to hug him right now, now that I think about it. But anyway, come to the Congress. Join us next week for another Open Minds UFO Radio, and have a wonderful week. Adios, muchachos.